Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Richard Dugan here with you every Sunday, 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We also archive these programs at richarddugan.com, the radio shows page, and we also stream the programs at those times of 7 a.m. and p.m. and 1 a.m. Monday morning at richarddugan.com as well as newspress.com. So certainly hope that you will check all of the information out. Also, linking to our guests when we have their archived program on the radio shows page. We have a link to their website so that you can get more information from them, and we encourage you to do that. It is incredible that it's springtime on the Central Coast. It's a beautiful place to be, honestly, pretty much anytime, and it's great to have you with us, and we certainly hope that you're taking advantage of this incredible weather. We are hoping maybe one day to have many of our guests live in studio to talk about have a conversation with them about the subject matter that is interesting to them as well as to us. Today is no exception, though she is live, if you will. She is coming to us via the phone lines, and her name is Helen Wu. She's written a book called Self-Aid, Inspirations to Turn Struggles into Success. And I want to welcome you to our program today, Helen Wu. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me, Richard. It's a pleasure.
The issue of health and wellness, I was chatting with someone just the other day about, and I said that, you know, I haven't had to really think about this until the last 10 or maybe 15 years at the outside. I really hadn't really thought about it much. And now I'm having to deal with not a lot of stuff. I mean, I'm quite honestly, I'm still very healthy. But there are some, you know, little minor things here and there. And as we get older, I'm in the second half, if you will, of what is hopefully will be a good 100-year run. And I know that it can be a struggle just dealing with one's health, because they say if you have your health, you have everything. Because when you don't feel good, you don't want to do anything.
Yes.
This is something that is quite remarkable. I mean, we're dealing with, well, some basic stuff that seems so simple. There was a news story, and maybe you heard this as well, that came out regarding one of the fast food chains and their chicken product specifically. And they said that they were going to be changing the product. They were going to be using chicken that did not have hormones in it. And I'm thinking, so you're acknowledging the fact that for decades you've been using chickens with hormones in them and antibiotics and all of these other. Now you're switching over to the all-natural or organic types of things. And I find that it's very interesting that, in particular, the fast food industry is finally really getting on the bandwagon, realizing that the public really has, maybe you can answer this as a from the question perspective, has the public really become more educated, or has the food industry getting more and more pressure from special interest groups to kind of push them into doing this, rather than this being, we're going to do this, it's altruistic, as opposed to, this is affecting our bottom line, we've got to make some changes?
I think it's a little of both, Richard.
Well, talk to us a little bit about this whole aspect of self-aid. The doctor is not the one who heals you, for starters.
It's all about, starting within yourself.
Yeah, and that it's your health. It ain't the doctor's.
No, it isn't. Yes, and it's not your best friend or the next-door neighbor or somebody you're trying to please to make happy. It's about pleasing yourself first before being able to, help the world and please the world. You've got to help yourself. I mean, that's such a main purpose of what I do and how I overcame all my challenges. Self-aid is really self-explanatory. It's about helping me and not being selfish, but taking care of me so that I can, go and do my job to help others.
Isn't that the first rule of survival?
It certainly is, and people have forgotten about it.
Yeah.
People think that, I've got to, and I'm going to use that phrase, brown nose or people please, or, you know, people think that they've got, I guess for their self-esteem purposes, they've got to please other people and do what they think the other people like them to do. What we forget is that we've got to make ourselves internally happy first and completely well before being able to, do, you know, basically shine your light upon others.
Well, I guess we need to figure out where to start. And hopefully the people that are listening aren't dealing with some major chronic conditions, but from your perspective, your experience, where would one start, especially maybe if somebody does have a rather lengthy laundry list of issues that they're dealing with?
Well, I can tell you right now, I have a whole list of laundry lists that I've gone through. And, you know, I can laugh about it today, but trust me, I wasn't laughing then. I've had one thing after another, and I thought it was endless. And the very, very beginning phase is acknowledgement, acknowledging that I can be better, acknowledging that I am not perfect, acknowledging that I can improve. Once you pass that acknowledgement phase, you can start helping yourself. And that is so important because self-aid starts with acknowledgement. If we're in denial and we're blaming everyone else for the whole world that's coming down upon us, we're not going to grow. I think the very first step is such a little baby step. It's just looking in the mirror and saying to yourself, you know what? I can be better. I can be better than I am right this moment. And that's where you start. I think that just acknowledging it to yourself, telling yourself, affirming it to yourself, that is your progress. That's where your progress begins. And all the tiny little tools, all the tiny little steps that I talk about with self-aid and my self-aid acronym, every chapter of my book as well, because it is the acronym, it genuinely has been the tools that I took with me to overcome every challenge. And you might have a list in front of you. I've gone through depression, abuse. Mental abuse has been probably one of the most horrific. Betrayal was awful because it was my best friend, whom I just never thought would ever hurt me the way she did. And she ran off with all my money. I'm talking about every cent I ever had was pretty much gone because I trusted her that much. And there was a lot in the bank. I had to foreclose. I had to file for bankruptcy. I went through, but the biggest mess was how she broke my heart. And probably one of the biggest things I've gone through was the first thing I mentioned was depression. I understand when a person is depressed. I understand when a person feels they've lost it all and they can't really focus. They can't really, they don't really want to live sometimes. I mean, I know there's suicidal thoughts. There's just so much deep darkness that I've experienced that I just feel like sharing with the world because I believe that we can all overcome it.
I remember producing a show, and this takes me way back to the early 80s. I used to produce a program, a health program, with a doctor. I even remember his name, Dr. Ken Anderson, and it was back in Phoenix. And I would sit on the other side of the glass, running the console and so forth, and he'd be chatting away, and we'd kind of wave at each other or make little gestures. You know, he would say something and I'd give a thumbs up or, you know, that wavering hand. I don't know if I want to do that. Or I remember once he was talking about healthy foods and I was really into Snickers bars. So I flashed up the Snickers bar and he says, no, it has nothing to do with Snickers. I mean, he was very clear about that. But one of the things that he used to say quite often was that a lot of people have become used to the way that they are, especially when it came to pain, when they were hurting.
Oh,
and he says, yeah. And he says, you do not have to settle. And so many people have.
Most definitely. Most people settle. You know that. Most people, mm-hmm. I settled for a long time.
Well, let's talk about shifting out of that. And this, maybe this is a good place to sort of a jumping off point in terms of where to begin, in terms of taking a personal assessment. You know, I mean, I'll even sit here and go through my own personal assessment. Say, okay, well, I've just had my physical. I've gotten the results. They look pretty good. They're better than last year, which is always nice.
Good.
The doctor is happy. I'm happier, and I feel good. I'm not at the weight I would like to be. I'm still a little heavier than I want to be. And I actually lost 15 pounds in 2014, only to end up gaining back about 6 to 8 of those. Although my wife keeps telling me every time I get on the scale, you have to add your hat and your jacket and your clothes and all of that stuff. But I,
he's right.
But I wasn't being weighed back then, you know, all natural. I was still wearing, you know, I was still fully clothed. But nonetheless, where do we want to, where do we want to begin this in terms of that self-assessment?
Well, one of the things is admitting, like I said earlier, that we have room for improvement. I think that some people go into this, like you mentioned earlier, settling. People get used to their surroundings and used to their situation, and but then they complain. We will stop complaining if we say to ourselves that we have room for improvement. Like you just said, you think you're a little bit overweight, but that's acknowledging something that you might want to be healthier, just a few pounds healthier. Mm-hmm. That's at least saying to yourself, once I say to myself, oh my goodness, I'm not in a good situation right here. You know what? Get out of this nasty relationship. Just a little thought process starts the beginning of my progress because I have now acknowledged it. And then I look for inspirations. I look for little inspirations. You might find your own amount of inspirations. I found Ellen DeGeneres throughout my depression. That was very helpful to me because I had stopped laughing. I mean, when I found that 1 hour, how wonderful that was to realize that I can laugh again was one of the most empowering things because I have been crying 24/7. Mm-hmm. You know, my face would never stay dry. It was just always tears falling off. I don't even know for what purpose and what was going through my head. All I know is that I couldn't be in a good place. Then I realized if I can laugh with that, within that 1 hour time frame of the day, wow, I can laugh for the rest of the day too. And that's when I started seeking more inspirations. And I think if we just can find that one little baby step, that one little inspiration, we can snap out of it slowly but surely. But I don't believe in doing everything overnight. I believe that everything takes baby steps.
Well, and of course, it took, if you will, baby steps to get into the condition that we are not happy with today.
Yeah, and then we have to recondition our thinking. I think reconditioning and putting in, like, now I know how to adjust when I have a bad thought. Once upon a time, when I had a bad thought, I dwelled on it. And then the thoughts got worse throughout the day. And bam, you have a bad day, right? Today, I'm able, because of all the tools that I've learned, I still have bad days, but I can knock out a bad thought now. I can say, oh my goodness, why are you thinking this? And put in and fill in with a good thought that changes my mood immediately and changes my outcome in the day. So there are little adjustments that we make when we become habitually thinking good thoughts. We habitually get good results.
Hmm. Well, that's one of the reasons why I love, first of all, my wife and I have shifted from the usual piped-in television, be it satellite or cable, and everything that we watch now is on demand. And we've seen some most incredible things that we would have never seen otherwise. But the thing that I love about that is that I can sit there and, yes, the phrase binge watching.
Uh-huh.
I can sit and I can watch multiple episodes of Cheers or Wings or Scrubs or whatever other. I love watching those shows.
Well, that's an inspirational thing to be able to laugh, because you're mentioning all the funny the comedies out there, the sitcoms, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the sitcoms are amazing. I think they made them for a good reason, to really cheer us up. I think they're awesome.
They are. Absolutely are. And I just find it really interesting how so many people, they for whatever reason, they're more into the drama, suspense, horror kinds of things. And we've talked many times on this program about how important it is to be careful about the things, the input that you take in through your five senses.
Ah, that's important.
Yeah. And also including the people you surround yourself with.
Oh, that is so important. That's another lesson learned. Oh, my goodness, Richard. That was a big lesson for me.
Talk to us about
it. The one about the friendship.
Talk to us about it.
Wow. First and foremost, you know, when I was in my highest high, I had so much. I'm talking financially. I had Laker tickets, King tickets. You're in Santa Barbara, right? I was in L.A. at the time. And Laker tickets for the basketball, Clipper tickets for the other basketball team, Kings tickets for the ice hockey. And, you know, I was living pretty high. I had 4 tickets for each show, for each game. And, you know, we did the wine and dine, the gourmet dinners, looking at the game, watching the game at the same time. Had tons of friends, Richard, as so-called friends, okay? Tons. Okay? You know, lots and lots of people who love you, lots and lots of people who wanted to be around you because they wanted to go to these games and hang out. And mm-hmm. when my best friend took everything from me and put me out in the cold pretty much, I had to readjust. My whole lifestyle changed. I had to foreclose my homes. I had to file for bankruptcy. Obviously, there's no more such thing as tickets to, you know, these games. I found myself with hundreds of friends that I thought I had with under a handful of true family friends. I call them family. They're not blood related, but they were my family. That was my family that was left over under a handful of friends that really were still loving me, were still thinking about me, were still wanting to be next to me, you know, getting me over the really rough time of my life, a financial rough time. I mean, I had to pick up the pieces. It was really hard when you come from a very, very high way of living, to have to pretty much give up everything the way my lifestyle used to be. To have these friends by my side meant the world to me, just to know that that was unconditional love. I mean, that was amazing what had happened to me. For me to now have a different view, also my eyes are wide open. I can see who my real friends are, people who really genuinely are caring, and I choose to surround myself around positive, loving people now. Before, I chose to surround myself around anyone and everyone. And, you know, the support system is so important. It makes you want more. It makes you more ambitious, makes you more loving. I mean, there's just so many, many things that happen when you find true friendships and people who are not here and in it for superficial reasons. I'm not cautious because I'm always hopeful. I love people. I love people in general. But I do know to surround myself around very happy people. And, you know, there are people, we all go do problems, okay? I've gone do problems. I was one of the ones who was always upset at one point, right? But I want to be around people who want to make a difference with their lives, with their internal personal life. And then obviously when you get better, all of us, we can make a difference in this world. But really, I just want to be around people who care enough to say, hey, you know what? I can improve. I can be better. And anytime you acknowledge that you can be better, you really are trying and you are better every day. And I believe in it. I believe in self-aid, period.
I know that there are a lot of folks listening who follow the news. They almost religiously. And in spite of the fact that for the majority of my career, I've worked for news talk information stations, but I haven't gotten sucked in the same way. Although there are times when we'll sit around a table and you know, yeah, I'll do a little venting of my perspective on certain things. But I know, because I know enough history, human history, that the events that are on the 6 o'clock news and every hour on the radio newscasts, those kinds of events have been happening since man has been on the planet. And we haven't gotten to the point yet where we're not being, where we're still being unkind to one another in many, many different ways. And since I know that that is what is happening, I really don't find it necessary for me to sit there and watch the evening news, for example. Now, I like watching, for example, The Daily Show with Jon Stewart because
it's funny.
Yes. When I was watching, I used to watch Peter Jennings. This was when I was actually in my late teens. And I was sitting there watching Peter Jennings on ABC one night and going, I wonder what it would be like if maybe there was a laugh track behind this guy. You know, to lighten it up a little bit, because it was that particular day. It was so heavy.
Yeah, I used to watch him too. Yeah, he was pretty serious.
Yeah, and then Jon Stewart comes along, and it's like, I can't get enough of this guy. I love the satire, but I also love the wonderful comparisons that he does that shows the utter, I'll use the word, stupidity of people who don't even realize. I mean, and I will share real quickly, this sort of off the beaten path, if you will, but there was a story out of Alabama where the legislature had passed a law preventing new laws from being enacted that were based on foreign religions. Religions outside the United States. And so he dragged out the piece in that regard, right? In terms of, they were talking primarily about Sharia law from the Muslim world. And it was then at near the end of the piece where he says, yes, unlike Christianity, which was from a guy who was born in Jerusalem. And it was like, the light sort of goes on for a moment and you're going, oh, a Judeo-Christian ethic in this country is, that's a foreign religion. Hello?
Oh, boy.
And but it's those kinds of side-by-side comparisons that he does that make it, in my opinion, so poignant as well as humorous. And these people don't hear or see, or they're not even aware of what it is that they're doing. But we do that with our health, too. I mean, I have justifications, as we all do, for managing my health in the way that I do. I was a huge soda drinker, Helen.
Oh, really?
Growing up, I delivered newspapers. I designed a cup holder for the big cups from the local convenience stores so that as I'm traveling about, I have the straw in there and I can just lift it out and take a sip and put it back in. And I stop at the various convenience stores and I have my own cup in its own cup holder strapped to my handlebars. Oh, it was a great thing.
How long did it take for you to either cut down or stop drinking soda?
Well, I'm in the process where I have cut down to this degree. Now I will walk to the local grocery store or convenience store. We have what's called a public market here in Santa Barbara that's 3 blocks from the station, but I'll usually go a little further than that. And I will go in and I will grab off of the freezer shelf, the refrigerator shelf, a very small, the smallest that they sell, 8-ounce glass bottle of Coca-Cola from Mexico because they still use real sugar. Now, the 8 ounces of that liquid is still bad, but it's only 8 ounces. So, whereas opposed to a 12 or a 16 ounce or a 32 or a 64 or a keg.
Oh, my goodness.
So at least I have, it's more like I'm just getting a taste. And when I do get, say, a cup, I fill the cup to the top with ice before I put any liquid in it, so that at the very least, I'm not getting nearly the volume of the liquid that most people put half a cup of ice, a third of a cup of ice, and the rest is the soda. But I've also switched over from dairy, from milk, to coconut water. To almond milk.
I love that too. That's in my coffee.
Yeah. I mean, and of course, I've learned how to make chai tea using either of those. But there are some alternatives. I used to buy a half gallon of milk from the local grocery store 3 and 4 times a week.
Wow, 3-4 times a week. Okay, that's a lot.
That's a lot. And I love milk, but I don't have nearly. I will go to a local cafe. I'll order a bowl of oatmeal. And you know how they bring you that little metal pitcher, that tiny little thing with milk in it to cool your beverage, your cereal down?
Yes.
That's all I have these days. That's it. So I've done some major cutting, but I've never actually been on an official diet. What is your perspective on diets?
Well, I say moderation is key, because I don't believe in starving somebody of what they're craving, but I do hope that, for myself, I believe in moderation. There will be junk food in my life once in a while. I'm not going to go in anywhere extremist. There are the extremists out there that are either extra crazy healthy or extra crazy junk food freaks. So there's the those are the extremes. I'm in the middle where I can do both. I love both. I enjoy healthy foods and I enjoy some junk food once in a while. But I control myself where if I give myself a treat of junk food, I just don't go overboard. And I try not to make it a habit. Again, I know that's easier said than done. I know it is. And for some people, if they see junk food, they want to eat the entire bag or they want to eat the entire, you know, a few burgers at a time. Or, you know, I don't really do fast food joints. But as far as in my home, because I have a six-year-old boy, there will be special treats. I will have some potato chips. I will have some chocolate chip cookies around the house. But they're only brought out occasionally. They're not brought out every day, and they're not brought out, you know, I just don't do anything extreme in a, and we don't have soda at all. Mm-hmm. So coconut juice, oh my goodness, that's definitely something I have. Almond milk is what I have normally with my coffee and with my son's cereal. And you mentioned those two things. I love those two things so much. Coconut juice, by the way, is one of the healthiest things you could put in your system to hydrate. It's more hydrating than water itself, they say. Is this true? This is what I'm told. And I do everything in moderation. The other day, my son and I were driving. It was a long-distance drive. I wonder where I was coming from. But I was craving, only because I saw the taco sign, okay? I know this is like probably once in 6 months I did that. I stopped at a drive-thru and had two tacos. And so, but am I going to condemn myself for it? No, because I rarely do it. And so I'm not going to, you know, be hard on myself. I love tennis, so I'm definitely a person who loves to exercise. I don't get it in my regimen as much as I want to, but boy, do I love tennis. I am the biggest fan of tennis, and I hope that, you know, walking for many, many people, if you don't do a sport, is really healthy. It's very, very healthy. So all my recommendation is, Richard, is doing everything in moderation and having a piece of everything. If you want to be healthy, moderation on your diet, on eating, but definitely have a little bit of exercise in your diet as well, in your regimen as well throughout the week. 3 times or 4 times a week if you don't play a sport. I think walking is great. I think jogging is wonderful. I think even exercising in place in your own home. You know, again, I go back to Ellen DeGeneres. I, for a while, when I couldn't find any tennis partners, Richard, I was in front of my TV on cable. On cable, you have a series of channels with music. I turn on a fast-paced music, and bam, I'm dancing. My son's dancing with me.
That's very
my exercise.
Cool. Yeah. Well,
for an hour straight, you know, for an hour straight, just dance, freestyle.
Absolutely. My father would agree with you as far as the whole aspect of moderation. That was one of the things that he would say. And it was almost, eat, drink, and be merry for tomorrow you die kind of thing, but in moderation. Because, yes, you may die tomorrow or next week, next month, next year, or 100 years from now. But if you're not going to enjoy your life, then what's the point of living your life? That's what we're here to do is enjoy it. But there are ways to do it so that your quality of life is maintained. And I think that's really what we're talking about here, isn't it? Is really, especially as we get older, and of course, my focus now is on that whole aspect, I had torn meniscus, so I had the little scope surgery, and after that,
are you okay now?
Oh, I love walking, and I'm walking even more. And my new phone has a pedometer in it, and so I have a belt clip, and so I'm doing anywhere from 5 to 10,000 steps a day.
Oh, great! That's great.
You know, and it keeps track from day to day. I can go back and see how many days I did 100 steps versus 1,000 versus 10,000. So at least there's kind of a nice thing. And as I've shared before, you know, dealing with the issues of hypertension, high blood pressure. But I'm taking the meds, but I'm also working on introducing into my diet things that will help naturally to level that out, as well as more of these programs on television to make one laugh so that, you know, you don't get stressed out by stuff. And I think that's probably the heart, in a manner of speaking, sounds a little contradictory in a way, is that it's our minds.
It really is.
That are playing that little game that really generates the dysfunction and the dis-ease.
It's completely in the mind. We have the power of so much. It's all in our thinking. It's all in our mind. It really is. A lot of it is in our head. If we can control that, wow, you'd be nice and healthy and just always happy. And I love what you say about laughter, because that's so important. Oh, I forgot to mention water. Water throughout the day is extremely important.
Sure. I've even heard the same thing as you mentioned also about the coconut water, that it's one of the best hydrators, if you will. When I first tried it, I don't know. It's not, doesn't taste real good to me. And I tried it a couple more times because I'm willing to try something once and sometimes twice. There is one thing I won't try with coconut water, and that is these wonderful flavored coconut waters with citrus. I have to say that either it expired or it is not a good combination, one of the two. But, oh, it was – I'll just stick with the – they had mixed it with, I think, orange or lemon or something. And you remember that song going way back. You know, put the lime in the coconut. You drink them both up. You put the lime in the coconut. You call the doctor. And you complain about a tummy ache. And then the solution is the very same solution that got you in the mess in the first place. Anyway, this is to me fascinating. We're going to continue our conversation here with Helen Wu. She's the author of Self-Aid. It is Inspirations to Turn Struggles into Success. We encourage you to stay with us. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Don't go away.
Tell me your story.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're talking with Helen Wu. She's the author of Self-Aid. I think that it's time for us to start taking a look at that in terms of the betterment of our civilization, our societies. We talk about looking for those new ways of living for all. Well, unless we take care of number one first, there's no helping anyone else. And so that's why Helen Wu is here on the program with us today. And we're very grateful for the information, the insight, and the inspiration as well that that you bring. Now, you alluded to, obviously, years ago, the struggles, the challenges that you faced in your life that brought you sort of around the bend, if you will, to beginning to realize that, you know, if I don't take care of Helen, nobody else will.
Oh, boy. I caught on to that quite at a young age. But it was the discovery of making a bunch of mistakes one after another that really caught my attention to say, hey, stop repeating the same stuff. And that's when I really applied much of what I talk about and practice every day now in my book, Self-Aid. So yeah, I'm definitely all about taking care of myself, making sure that I'm in good condition to take care of others. Because, you know, I want to take care of others. I want to be a great mom to my son. I want to be a great friend. I want to be the best I can be for myself and for others. And so it's the wanting, it's the acknowledgement that I can improve every day, and it's also the wanting to really, really genuinely help people. I didn't think the way I do today. I didn't think like this 15, 20 years ago. I was out for just me, you know. Mm-hmm. Today I'm really genuinely from the bottom of my heart. I have more compassion because of all the stuff I've gone through. And I understand other people. I really understand them. You know, I have more empathy. My heart has been touched in such ways because of the pain that I've experienced that I understand other people. And I do want to help them. I mean, I genuinely do. And, you know, just, you know, you find your passion after, you know, unfortunately, I don't want people to suffer as much as I did just to find their passion. But I did find my passion through the many losses. You know, the best friend betraying me, you know, hitting rock bottom financially. I did find my passion throughout this struggle, you know, and I'm grateful. I really love what I do. I love what I talk about. I love Self-Aid. I love even my second book's coming out in April. I just want to continue doing this for the rest of my life because it empowers me, and I hope it empowers others.
I'm curious as if you were at all trapped at one point by the desire to correct the wrong, if you will, that your best friend had done, and getting, if you will, getting justice. I mean, it sounds to me like a crime was committed. So why not? Let's run this through the judicial system, and we'll get satisfaction.
Yeah, you know what? Again, that's another thought process that I changed throughout the last 15, 20 years of my life. I used to be, if somebody hurt me, I want to get them back. You know, you deserve this. You know, and I used to have that mentality of thinking, if someone hurts one, you know, an eye for an eye. And, you know, honestly, I have given that thought process up because it just doesn't benefit me. And also, I can't grow and I can't move on. I know people think I'm nuts. Initially, people think I'm nuts for saying, I genuinely wish this person well. She's a girlfriend of mine. I said, please, I wish her the best. We don't have anything on paper, Richard. We can't even catch her if we tried, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I was that trusting. Now, all I can say is that I wish her the best, and I know for a fact she won't do this for other people anymore because I think she's in a lot of trouble, you know? And she skipped town. She left California for about 2-week period, Richard, because I had gone through all the other challenges in my life already. I had already put my head on. I screwed it on tight, and I had already gone through the phases of what I was doing to help myself when I encountered challenges. It just gets not easier per se. Yeah, I guess it gets easier. It gets more to a ritual. Should I call it a ritual? Again, it's habitual thinking, and it took me 2 weeks to get over the very, very severe pain that she just pretty much stabbed me in my heart so many ways. That hurt to me more than the money loss, even though the money loss years later was going to affect me in a very, very not easy way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I went through financial disaster because of her.
Mm.
But it took me about 2 weeks to say to myself, you know, because I was brokenhearted. I was definitely back in tears. I was just shocked. I was shocked out of my mind, pretty much. And I had these feelings of anger, and I had these feelings of how dare she do this to me? How evil can she be? How horrible! And I, you know, for moments there, wished, you know, not such good thoughts upon her. But then I snapped out of it because of all the stuff that I've been through. I just knew that I had to find love within myself. I just had to find something that, I don't know, I just know how to go to the good place now.
Mm-hmm.
When my mind is thinking, you know, bad thoughts, I go to a good place. I wish her well. I send her love. I send her light. I just want her to hopefully never treat others that poorly again. But I have to move on. I cannot dwell on anger. I cannot. And that's one of the things I do talk about under the freedom chapter, the F for freedom in my acronym of self-aid. Freedom is one of the most important things that all of us have to work on. We have to free ourselves of negativity and baggage and anger, resentment, and we have to learn to forgive. Even if the person, including, you know, yourself, myself, I had to forgive myself because I blame myself for the biggest portion of this. I said, you're so stupid. I'm talking to myself.
Mm-hmm.
You're so stupid for trusting her. How stupid can you be for doing this, for trusting a person and giving her this much access to your accounts? I mean, I was very hard on myself, very. So anyone in this world who hears this story, you can call me stupid all you want because I went through that phase already, and I know the only thing I can say about myself right now is that I am just a very trusting, hopeful person. And if that's stupidity to you, that's fine. But here I am also, I forgave myself, and I forgave her. I completely forgive. I've never heard from her again. You know, there was a time where she was still trying to give me small increments, and then she was lost. She disappeared into the East Coast somewhere.
Did you ever get to a point where you were actually... this is sort of two-part thing. You were grateful for her role in teaching you the lessons that you learned. And then the other part of it is, did you ever get to a point where you acknowledged your role and or participation in this particular drama and said, oh, she didn't do this to me. I did this to me.
Okay, well, the first part, I definitely acknowledged her in my life, and I am grateful because you know what? I think that I'm grateful for every lesson that comes my way. At the time when you're going through that process, it's so painful. It's so painful that you're not really grateful just that moment, okay? But thinking about it and passing through this challenge, passing through the struggles, passing through the pain, I find it. I am grateful because without her coming into my life, I wouldn't have found my passion. I wouldn't have found out that everything that I did before to earn money or to have money in my life was not something I loved. I didn't love everything about my life. I had a lot of, you know, there was a lot of insecurities about what am I here for? What am I here on this earth for? You know, so I have a bunch of friends that want to drink and have fun and go to parties and do things. But what am I here for? You know, there was just no purpose. I couldn't find my purpose. So I am grateful for that. On the second part of the question, are you asking me, did I make a difference in her life?
No. The second part of the question has to do with whether you came to a point where you acknowledged, oh, I did this to me, not her. It's your life. It's not hers. She did a terrible thing to you, but you also allowed her into your life.
Yes.
And so on and so forth.
I didn't blame either one of us. I don't blame her. I don't blame me. I actually look at this in a way I never used to. I actually believe that, hey, things happen for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
I was in her life for a reason. She was in my life for a reason.
Exactly.
I don't blame myself. I don't blame myself for, you know what, when I do blame myself, as I blame others in the past, I can't move on. Mm-hmm. I cannot get on to the next phase of my life. So I have to let go of blame. I don't blame me. I don't blame her. I am not in denial anymore. My eyes are opened. I am very clear-headed now. I can see the light. I can see what's in front of me. Hey, we all make mistakes, number one. You cannot condemn yourself for the rest of your life for making these huge errors. We make mistakes. We're human, you know? So some mistakes are bigger than others. But I cannot blame myself because I did for a while. I did. I went through the phase of blaming. I did.
I
blame myself saying how stupid I was and how could I have not seen that there were signs that, you know, she was not loyal to you. I mean, I did go through phases, but once I knocked it all out and kicked it to the curb, as I call it, mm-hmm. you kicked the baggage to the curb,
mm-hmm.
I definitely grew. I just everything. You see so much clearer when you don't blame anymore.
Tell me about the pre-aspects, and not just specifically in your life, but in anyone's life, that impact, affect, and really have a degenerative effect on one's health and well-being.
You're saying, tell you how...
Prior to your insights, prior to that, aha, I'm not going to be that way. Prior to that switch being flipped that said, I'm going to be grateful. I'm not going to be negative. I'm not going to dwell in revenge and what have you. I'm going to send love to her and on her way and so forth. Prior to that, what was your health like? And let's talk a little bit about
holding on to that
attitude and how it impacts one's life and well-being.
Wow, Richard, you know what? That you really hit that. That's when I was angry, when I was resentful, when I had blame towards me and towards others. I had physical as well as mental issues. I mean, again, that depression happened, physical pain. I had fibromyalgia for years. I mean, there are so many things that happened when I was not clear-headed, when I myself was not able to let go of that pain and that. Listen, we'll always have a memory of the pain. We're human. We're always going to have a memory because as long as we have a memory bank working for us, we will always remember that someone has hurt us or we have hurt ourselves. But that can be just a memory. It doesn't have to be taken with us every day at present and future to go into our daily tasks. We don't have to dwell on things. We can definitely remember there was pain. Hey, let's try not to make it happen again. That's all I can do now. But yes, I was definitely in not good shape. I had what the doctors narrowed it down to, hey, we've got to knock out all the options. It is fibromyalgia. Fibromyalgia is pain all over my body, and it's a different pain everywhere, every day. It was awful. I lived in the, you know, and when that pain was around, I remember complaining a lot. I remember being upset often. I remember being on a down note versus an up note. I remember, you know, it just was I was in a negative situation. I couldn't snap out of it. I couldn't snap out of it for a while. It was a few year period where fibromyalgia has taken over. Every doctor has said I have fibromyalgia. So I wasn't just going to one doctor. Every doctor ruled out everything else and said I had fibromyalgia. And for some people who know what fibromyalgia is, or some people who have heard of it, some people mock it. Like, oh, yeah, she just claims she has fibromyalgia. But honestly, yes, it is a nerve thing. It is emotional, mental, and physical.
Hmm. I recall going through my, and I say this hoping that this will stand the test of time, my first and only divorce. I remember my ex-wife being declared with chronic fatigue and depression. And I remember sharing this with some people at the time, and they said, well, she needs to get out and do stuff, which is not what she wanted to do.
No, you don't want to do things when you're depressed.
Yeah, but that's the one thing that you need to do in those kinds of circumstances. And I'm no clinician. I have no medical degree or anything. But it just seems to me like, you know, there's a period of time when we get stuck in those kinds of emotions. That's okay. It's how long we get stuck that makes the difference. And then, okay, I'm stuck. Now what am I going to do to get unstuck?
No, you're exactly right. Because I was stuck too. I was stuck for a while. I honestly don't know for how long. Because when you're in it, it feels like forever.
Yeah.
I honestly don't know the time frame, but I can tell you right now that I understand what that feels like. I have told people, no way. I don't want to go anywhere. I didn't want to call anyone. I didn't want to talk to anyone. I just wanted to sit on the couch or lie on the couch, and probably I couldn't sleep at night. I had insomnia. I mean, I was miserable. I watched TV all day long, every day. I cried all day. I mean, it was like, hey, welcome to misery land. I mean, honestly, I was miserable, but I didn't want to get out of it because I wanted to. It's almost like staying in that place because I had nothing in me to snap myself out of it until I told you about that 1 hour of comedy, 1 hour of Ellen DeGeneres started to open my eyes. And I said, oh my goodness, she can make me laugh. I can laugh again. That was the most empowering thing to me, knowing that I can laugh again at one point or another. And, you know, I don't know if you follow Ellen, but she does this amazing thing in the beginning of the show after her monologue where she dances and brings the energy of the entire audience, including the people watching the TV show, in her live audience and the audience around the world. We get up and dance with her. You know, it is so empowering, and it makes us happy instantly. It is just, there's such an uplifting thing about what she has done to me. Now, not everyone will have the same inspiration, but I can tell you right now that you should try watching 1 hour because you'll laugh too. Mm-hmm. It is so empowering to find that inspiration when you're down. And if you're not looking, which I didn't look, Richard, mm-hmm. but I just found it by accident on TV. Okay, so because I know about depression, because I've been there, I love to just remind people, hey, check out your favorite movie. Check out your favorite book. Call the friend that you know that's going to make you laugh on the other side of the phone call. You know, find that one itsy-bitsy inspiration that puts a smile on your face, and then you're on your road. The baby steps to success, to getting yourself out of that condition that you're in.
Well, I've seen her program on a few occasions. And yeah, I'm familiar with the dancing that she does. And I just kind of watched it and kind of chuckled as I'm watching this, thinking, oh, this is one crazy lady and she's having a great time on her program.
Yeah, you know what?
You know, I never even thought, okay, she's actually trying to raise the energy in the room and this and that and the other. But it makes perfect sense. It really does.
What's beautiful about her is that she is also not just somebody who makes people laugh and wants to laugh also. She is one of the kindest human beings in this world. She has given and given and given. She is in the position where, obviously, she's so successful, but she's in the position where she could just keep all her money and just travel the world and just do whatever it is. But she gives and gives and gives and gives daily. And if you watch the program like I do, follow it. I have it on my DVR. I record everything. I can't follow it every single night because of my child and work, but I catch it whenever my son is asleep, or sometimes I catch it with my son, but very often when my son's in the house, I'm still on the computer at one point or another doing some work. But my son loves her too. It's amazing what she does to brighten up our spirits, our room, and just to lift us up. I mean, I want and hope that every person listening to this right now who's in a dark place or is feeling sad or feeling distressed or feeling upset because of their work or whatever situation around them, I hope that they can find a tiny little inspiration that can put that smile or that glare, that light back in your eyes. That's so important. And Ellen DeGeneres was that for me.
I find it really interesting also how the various aspects of our society will pass judgment on people like her, who are just they're just enjoying their lives for starters, and they get nothing but grief. And I just it's like, leave the person alone. I mean, come on, what did they do to you? You know, how is what they are doing really affecting your life, other than the fact that, you know, you're in misery, and we all know misery loves company, and she is not the company that you want. You want someone to share your pain and all of that stuff rather than you coming out of it. And that's all she's trying to do, and all kinds of other folks as well. You know, it's I still
she's to her phase. They blacklisted her years ago when she came out of the closet.
Yeah.
And
I thought that
and,
was...
you know, she's gone through her severe challenges as well. But she's come through it in such a beautiful light. I mean, she cares about just helping others now. And I love that about her. She's really just a beautiful person.
She really is. Yeah, I'm just flabbergasted. It's one of those things, too, that you know, I was so surprised. It's like, this woman is a very funny comedian, and she's really making people laugh and lightening the load. And then they blast her with this when she tells them. But by the same token, I sit here and I go, why is this information supposed to make a difference to me? Why are you sharing this with me? Why can't you just go ahead and live your life? It was like my best friend. We went through grade school, high school, and college together. I consider us still close. We don't communicate as much. He still lives back in Phoenix. And he's gone through his tough times. But I still remember the day he came to me. And he told me he was gay. And the only response I could give him was, well, what do you want me to do with that information? How is that? Is that supposed to change our relationship or something? You're still my best friend.
That is so great. That
you know?
Is so great.
And so when I hear individuals in the sporting, I still remember the guy who was the first NFL player to come out. I'm going, who cares? I don't care. If you enjoy playing football, play football.
You're still human.
You're still human. Have fun with your life. You know, this is where I ask me a subject and I'll tell you how I feel. But I just think, you know, just go live your life. Enjoy it. I still struggle with the people who have problems with other people, you know, who want to live their lives a little differently than the rest. And especially when it comes to people who, you know, profess their love for same-sex partners, I'm sitting here thinking, and I even want to ask the question of those who are married in a quote-unquote traditional relationship, how is that relationship over there affecting you in yours?
Exactly.
Are you feeling challenged? Are you feeling tempted to go off with this other man or woman? You know, if you're happy in your relationship, why can't you be happy for them and theirs?
Exactly. You know what it is? I think society's got to stop judging. They've got to stop judging. We are all human. We are allowed to love who we are, obviously. I don't believe in pedophiles, okay? That's
right.
A whole different thing. But we are allowed to love who we love. It doesn't matter what our sex is. It doesn't matter if you know, gender. We are allowed to find love.
Yeah.
And why judge? I mean, my son doesn't even know the difference. I'm Chinese American. He doesn't know the difference between me and a Caucasian and a black person and a Spanish person. My son sees no color because I don't teach color.
Right.
I teach that we're all human. I don't teach even, you know, and okay, so I have a confession. There was Days of Our Life was on one day. The soap opera. And And there's a gay couple on there, you know, man on man. You know, my son goes, oh, man kiss men? I say, yeah, we all kiss each other. Like, we can all like anyone we want to like.
Yeah.
And so my son knows the gay, I never even make it sound different to my son. My son knows that we are allowed to find love with a girl or a boy if that's what we choose, as long as we're in love.
Well, I applaud you for that, and I really hope that people will, you know, start to take a look at that in themselves. You know, stop looking outside of yourself for problems. You know, start looking inside yourself, you know, for solutions, for the things that make you happy. Because, you know, just like we talked earlier about the effect of holding on to a grievance, of wanting to get revenge on someone else detracts from your well-being. Well,
completely.
So do these other things about being so focused and judging on the outside world. You know, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I have high blood pressure is because, you know, I still have, I've gotten much better at dealing with drivers. You think I would have chosen a better place to live than California to deal with drivers? Go to Wyoming or North Dakota or something.
You're hilarious. Wait, this traffic in Santa Barbara?
Oh yeah. But it's one of those things that that's the funny thing too was that when I went for my physical the last couple of years, the test results were getting better and better. Yet I was still dealing with the issue of hypertension, high blood pressure. You know, and I says, well, but you're not going to find it in the test results because that's not where it's going on. It's in my head, you know. So maybe my next step is therapy.
Well, you know what? I practice laughter therapy every day, laughter yoga.
Yeah.
That's my son and that's our therapy. We do that. We genuinely do that. That comes from Dr. Kataria from India. Now it's like in 5,000 laughter groups around the world. But all we do is look at each other, laugh for no reason at all, and then you laugh harder because now you're laughing and looking at each other and you're just making each other laugh. And so that is therapy. I say to other people who can't afford therapy just yet, start there.
Yeah. Well, you know, I used to be getting emails from laughter groups like that, and I was trying to have somebody on to talk more about it, especially getting into not only just the basic physics, physical aspects of it, but, you know, how it changes the physiology of the human being and so forth. So maybe one day we'll continue to pursue that. But, yeah, it's... I mean, I love to go see comedies. I love to watch them on television or, you know, wherever I'm able to find them. Like I said, I had to get a big chuckle though when I went to see the movie because of the way that it was. And I went partly because my wife wanted to go see this particular movie, and it was. Well, actually, there were two different movies. One of them was the Blair Witch Project, and I remember sitting there watching this movie, you know, and going, wow, this is just awful. You know, they found this film and da-da-da. And then a few weeks later when it was revealed that this was actually a movie that was made, I got angry. I was mad because they'd sucked me into the theater under false pretenses.
They did that, didn't they?
They did.
So I just remember you reminding me of that.
And then my intelligence didn't kick in right away when I saw the title of the movie World War Z. There are people around me who love watching the television series The Walking Dead about zombies, right?
Yeah.
And they love anything and everything zombies. I don't. So I'm thinking,
Me neither. Oh,
Brad Pitt sounds like I like watching Brad. He's fun to watch, you know. We'll go see this one in the theater. Stupid me, in a manner of speaking. Do you understand the letter Z stands for?
Oh, zombie.
Exactly. If I had put that together before we'd gone, I probably wouldn't have gone to see it. But needless to say, it was an interesting experience.
I'm so not into zombies or vampires.
No, it's not my thing. But, you know, I if it's yours, folks, you know, more power to you.
Yeah.
There'll be more seats for you because I won't be there.
Yeah, I won't either. And my son's only 6 years old. He's definitely not interested.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with it. I'm okay with doing without for now.
Exactly. So there are several different aspects. Now, especially when talking about your book, there are a couple of ways of for people to peruse this. Now, you have little introductions in each of the chapters that actually are part of the acronym for self-aid.
Yes.
And then you have jillions of quotes in here. It's just amazing. Here's "Where There Is Love, There Is Life" from Mahatma Gandhi. It's just a series of quotations from so many different notable people that it's really very Norman Vincent Peale, and it's always too soon to quit. I flipped past the chapter heading there. I think that was under attitude. Yeah, attitude. Mindset is reflected in your attitude. Make yours one of positive thinking and gratitude. You take us through a couple of other things and a series of various quotes.
They're called wooisms.
Wooisms. I like that.
Yes, I take all the these famous people from the past and present, great thinkers and philosophers. I take their beautiful words that have encouraged me, and I create my thought process, my words, and my actions on that. So a lot of them are my daily affirmations. A lot of them are just the way I think in order to get through my struggles. They're all little inspirations and affirmations for myself. And I hope that they can also inspire others.
Also, I must also thank you for the little note you left put in the book in terms of looking forward to being on this program. And it's really been a lot of fun to have you on the program as well. And those words are greatly appreciated as well. Before we wrap up the program, I have three final questions for you. Number one, who is Helen Wu?
Who is Helen Wu? Wow, that's a loaded question. Helen Wu, I am a very strong, loving mother, friend, human being. I am here to definitely tell everyone that we can conquer all. We can fight every battle. We can overcome every challenge. Who is Helen Wu? I am a very, very strong, confident woman because I believe in me and because I believe in self-aid. So that's Helen Wu. Helen Wu is self-aid in a nutshell.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I hope to inspire everyone who has gone through or is going through a challenge. Because I have gone through so many of my own, I know how it feels when I'm in it. And I just want to encourage others that we can get to the other side of it. We all can, each and every one of us. Again, I don't believe in doing just something overnight. I do believe in baby steps, but I challenge everyone that to beat their challenge, because I believe that all of us can be on the other side of it. We can, from that frown, we can have a smile. And if I can do that to somebody, in fact, I've had such good feedback on my book lately. I've had people who come to me and say, it's not just a book that I finished and put away. It's a book that I put by my bedside now. And for someone said to me, it's a book that I put on my office table. I open to whatever page and it uplifts me. And I was so happy to hear all this. It just really, to me, if it can happen for somebody, the way they're telling me about it, their feedback to me, I am just so happy that I can inspire someone to make someone have a better day, to make someone smile when they're not smiling originally, to make someone understand that they can overcome their struggle. It is, for me, my message is there. This is what I'm here for. I'm here to help inspire one other soul, as I was hoping for, obviously, when I was going through my struggles.
Who inspires you?
Well, two people. Ellen DeGeneres inspires me every day, as we've spoken about already. And my grandmother inspired me growing up. She's in heaven now. And she gave me unconditional love when I felt it in very few places, if at all. She just gave me a love that I knew that if that existed, then I can look for more. And yes, she inspired me. I still inspires me. And Ellen inspires me every day about the power of laughter, the power of kindness, the power of laughter. At the end of her every show, she says, be kind to one another. That's her thing. She's just an amazing person, and I hope to be on her show one day. Ellen, are you listening?
Exactly. Well, I hope she is, and so I would take it you have not met her in person yet, so that would be a wonderful experience. Helen Wu, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program here and talking to us about self-aid inspirations to turn struggles into successes. This has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And you can find me on thehelenwu.com or look for my book on Amazon.
And you're also your book is also available, and your website is, I believe it is self-aid. What was it? I was just looking at it just a moment ago.
There's a few. Self-aid with Helen Wu.com.
That's it right there. Yes.
Or thehelenwu.com, thehelenwoo.com.
And again, Helen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Richard.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to all.